with us now, Mr. Nicholas Lane. What's going on, brother?
Good evening. It is great to be back on. I couldn't sign off last week. You guys were in the middle of your debate, and I had to get off the line. So sorry about last week, but I'm happy to be on. I'm gonna say it's Bengals and Eagles in the Super Bowl is what I think it's gonna be. You're right. The Mahomes ankle sprain is, you know, I think Cincinnati is good enough on the defensive line to put enough pressure on the Chiefs, and I'm surprised this Chiefs offense got the number one seed outside of Kelce and maybe lately Jerick McKinnon, but outside of that, they don't really have enough threats. And don't tell me that Juju Smith-Schuster is a threat because he's not what he was. I think it'll be a close game between the Bengals and Chiefs, but I do think the Bengals will win.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's what I think, man. You know, it's going to be a close game. If it's a blowout, I'd be surprised. But if there is a blowout, it's going to be a blowout in Cincinnati's favor. I don't see Kansas City blowing out the Bengals because the Bengals are good enough on the defensive side of the ball to play Travis Kelce and make somebody else beat them. I had a debate with somebody, a friend of mine in the preseason, who he's a Kansas City fan. And he was upset that they let Tyreek Hill go. And he was saying, we don't have any explosive players on offense. You know, we just let our best receiver walk. And I'm like, okay. You had a guy on your team by the name of Travis Kelce who was eating before Tyreek Hill became Tyreek Hill. Kelce allowed Tyreek Hill to become who he is now as a wide receiver because when he came into the league, he was not a polished wide receiver. He was more of a special teams return guy. That's how they used him. And over the years, because you had guys like Kelce and some of the other receivers that they had with all that speed, it allowed Tyreek Hill to develop his route running, become a better pass catcher, and the rest is history. But Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the league. He's the best tight end in the league. He's one of those guys that doesn't come out the field. You don't have to scheme him. When he's on the field, you don't know if they're going to run or pass. And he's an excellent route runner. And he's a matchup problem. So I was trying to get him to realize that Travis Kelce is still going to do him. He's still going to get his because nobody can stop him. And this whole season, Travis Kelce, I think this season had a career season as the number one, you know, receiver on the team. So with that being said, when you really only got one true threat, you get this deep in the playoffs, teams get better, defenses get better, coordinators get better. Buffalo had a pretty good arsenal. I mean, that team they shut down, they got some ball players on that side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball. So to shut them down to only 7 points in their backyard, your defense doing something. And, you know, just like last year, the Bengals had to go on the road and do it because Kansas City had the number one seed. So we're back at it. That's my prediction. So, yeah, and then we'll get into the NFC a little bit later and talk about that matchup. But, you know, Nicky Bucky said it himself, Philadelphia, his bet is Philadelphia, you know, Bengals. My pick is Philadelphia, not Philadelphia, but Bengals 49ers. This is going to be an upset because I don't know too many people that's picking San Fran because of the Jalen Hurts factor. If Philadelphia had a regular quarterback back there that couldn't change the game with his legs, this would be San Francisco favorite hands down, not, you know, everything. But I'm a Bucs fan. We all are Bucs fans. We've seen a great defense neutralize a runner. Michael Vick. I'm not saying Hurts is Vick from a speed standpoint. Hurts got some speed, but he's not Vick fast, but he can throw a little bit better than Vince. But a little bit better than Vick. But 49ers defense is too strong. I feel like when you got a defense as strong as San Francisco, you set the tempo. You set the tempo on defense. And the offense have to adjust to what you're doing because you're executing your game plan so well that the offense actually have to adjust to the defense. So the defense is setting the tempo. I believe while, you know, the Eagles has this, you know, high-flying offense and, you know, they spread the ball out. They spread it around. I've watched San Francisco defense all season long.
I think both teams can actually dictate the pace and the tempo because the Eagles are so good with running the ball.
Yeah.
That you can control the clock, obviously, running the ball on the offensive side. Where on the defensive side, I think the 49ers can force the Eagles into being one-dimensional.
Yep.
If they are able to stop the run,
yep,
and all of a sudden you don't. I mean, yeah, Jalen Hurts can get out of the pocket pretty well, but the Niners have tons of speed on defense, of course. And to turn the Eagles into one-dimensional would be pretty brutal for them, and I don't think it would go well. But I think this game is going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be very close.
Yep.
It's going to be fairly low scoring. I don't think it's going to be a high scoring game. And it's going to be one, definitely, in who's ever front seven. You know, can either stop McCaffrey or can stop, you know, all of the Eagles' rushing attack. Gainwell, Sanders, Hurts. I mean, those are all, you know, pretty prolific runners. I mean, Gainwell had over 100 yards against the Giants.
Yeah.
So I would say that it'd be one of those 17-14 games. Like, it's going to be pretty close.
Yeah, it is. I think it's going to be a slugfest. And you're right about, you know, making it one-dimensional. Yeah, Hurts may still get out the pocket from time to time and scramble and hurt them, but the speed of San Francisco's defense, especially at the linebacker position, because they play a traditional, you know, 4-3. So they have three linebackers on the field. All of them can run like the wind. All of them are great in pass coverage as well. And they all get up the line of scrimmage and run support, as well as the safety they have. I can't remember his name, but he's almost looked like a carbon copy of Troy Polamalu, which is his favorite player.
Mufanga?
Is that his name? Man, that dude.
I think he is a safety. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That dude Mufanga. There. Man, every game I've seen in San Francisco play, that dude run on the field like he shot out of cannon. I mean, he's fast, he's physical, run support is outstanding. Everybody on San Francisco in pass coverage can cover. That's the major difference with San Francisco defense is in pass coverage, whether it's zone or man, they can all do it. So there's really no holes on the 49ers defense. If they make the Eagles one-dimensional, it could be a long game for Hurts. And Hurts is still going to make plays because that's just who he is. But people not talking enough about Brock Purdy, because Brock Purdy can also make plays. He's been the starting quarterback for the last 7 or 8 games, I think. And they're actually averaging more points per game with Purdy at quarterback than they were with Garoppolo or Trey Lance. So their offense actually got better with Purdy, you know, under center.
I don't want to jump to conclusions here, and I'll get off the NFL here in just a second myself, but is Brock Purdy a Brett Favre with type quarterback to you?
He's got a little bit of that gunslinger mentality, but I think he's a little bit more careful with the football. You know, when he throws it, he's not afraid to throw it in any window. We've seen that already. He's got the arm to, you know, throw it deep. He's got the accuracy to throw it short. You know, he makes good decisions with the ball, and he doesn't put the team in position with turnovers. So at this stage,
he is taking some hits.
Yeah,
but he's not getting rid of the ball fast enough for sure.
Yeah, he is. But you know, for a young QB, rookie, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, the very last pick of the draft, you take that because it's better than him, you know, forcing the pass into coverage and throwing, you know, an interception. So I don't, you know.
What I like about Purdy the most is that he's not a game manager.
No.
He's a dude that actually improved them. And that's one of the most impressive things about him.
Yeah. I always forget the dude's name. The head coach,
Kyle Shanahan.
Yes, Kyle Shanahan even said that he is not a game manager and he's not changed the offense one single bit since he's been in the lineup. It's been the same offense that he had, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo running, and you know, Trey Lance. So the fact that you could bring this guy in, Mr. Irrelevant, and he improves your team to the point where, you know, the gloves are off. There's no training wheels or anything like that. I believe in this game, it's going to come down to one of the two quarterbacks making a play, and I just feel like San Francisco is more equipped for a slugfest. Because they can beat you both ways. They can run the ball. They got Christian McCaffrey. And they can line up and drop back. And they can pass it. So they're more set up for these defensive type of ball games where, you know, the Eagles, if you make them one-dimensional, they might be a problem because
they're going to beat them. You're going to beat them for sure.
Yeah.
AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert. I mean, it sounds good on paper, but it's not even close to the talent of what the Niners have on offense.
No.
With Miles Sanders, more of a running back. He's not a pass catching back. Obviously, Gainwell is, but McCaffrey's better than both of them combined.
Yep.
So, I would say you know, you don't want it to be an offensive game against the Niners, and you would hope, for the Eagles' sake, that you can catch the Niners on a couple of defensive mistakes to bide your time, because your defense is not even close to as good as the Niners' defense is. Jalen Hurts is, I think, a pretty big factor in this game, too, that I think we're giving credit for. We'll just have to – I still think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be low scoring. And the way that the Eagles can win this is if their home field creates some turnovers. And I think they got to strike fast on offense. They can't just go methodically down the field. I think they need to – strike A.J. Brown pretty deep, because we have D.K. Metcalf was able to beat the Niners on a couple plays in the wild card game, and I think that's something that the Eagles really will need to look at is to have A.J. Brown beat him deep.
Yeah. 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 So, man, I know you want to get into some NBA, so let's go ahead and get into, some NBA here and talk about where we at in the season, and we're not that far away from the halfway point coming up here for the All-Star break. So,
well, the trade deadline coming up about roughly 2 weeks or so too. So we get to talk about our boy pretty soon. That trade deadline is coming up. Our draft best prospect we've ever seen come out. We get to name his name. So I'm excited for that when that's going to come up. Probably next show I will start dropping his name and talking about the context of where some of these teams, of how they need to position themselves to shed salary, to accumulate some draft picks, or who would, you know, actually, outside of the team getting the first pick, you know, what teams can actually just throw the mother load of a deal at the number one team to get said player. But we just got done talking about four NFL well-balanced, structured, you know, good coaching. And then the NBA had a trade on Monday involving two teams that is probably the opposite of that. And that is the LA Lakers and the Washington Wizards. When I think about, you know, competence and winning, I don't think about those two teams, I can tell you that much. So Washington Wizards, they trade Rui Hachimura, who is a failed top 10 pick, overrated, only a one-dimensional offensive player. This dude averages less than a half a block a game in his career. He doesn't even average a steal per game. He averages maybe one assist per game, and I'm not even exaggerating. He's only had 1 year where he's shot 40% from three on a low volume, which was last year. I think Rui Hachimura is really overrated, and the fact that he went to the Lakers and the crazy talking heads on NBA TV are going to probably salivate over his, you know, his point getting. But the dude can't do anything else. I mean, the thing is the Lakers traded a player that's more useless than Kendrick Nunn, because that guy is completely useless, and 3 second-round picks. So to understand this, I would need to sit in, like, a freaking math class at Harvard and take a nap and then get up and then still not understand what the heck just happened. I don't know why they did this. For the Lakers to think they have Lonnie Walker on their roster, and Lonnie Walker is exactly the same player as Hachimura, but not that top 10 pick. Lonnie Walker is all offense, no defense. He doesn't do anything else but shoot. He doesn't give you much else. So when you already have it on your roster, and a Schroeder is a not pass first point guard, Russell Westbrook is a wild card player, LeBron James, self-explanatory. He's not, I mean, he gets assists, right? But he's not a pass first dude. because he can't on that roster. He can't be that player on that roster. So then to trade, obviously you see where I'm going with this, Derek.
Yeah.
Already have a bunch of ball first dominant shoot first dudes. Why did you just trade for another one? I don't get it.
And from what I've seen now, the Lakers currently have four players that were on Washington team just a few years ago. All these guys was on Washington. I think it was however you say the dude, Hashimura, or and then let me see. It's him.
Yeah, Westbrook.
Yeah, him, Westbrook, Thomas Bryant, and I want to say it was Troy Brown. Was it Troy? I think it was Troy Brown.
Yeah. Troy? Dude, Derek's got his homework. Look at you. There's the pause button. I love it.
Yeah, man.
That's great. That's amazing. It's almost like the Lakers should call up Marcin Gortat out of retirement somewhere in like Serbia or Poland or something, wherever the heck he's from, and just ask him to play for a game or two, give him the starting five of Wizards players.
Yeah. So obviously these guys, you know, they weren't good enough. Washington didn't think they were good enough for them. I mean, not on the Lakers, I guess, because you got LeBron and Anthony Davis. They could be difference makers. I mean, Bryant has been, you know, pretty good as a starter, you know, in the Lakers lineup. He's been pretty good. We'll see what
Hashimura. Yeah, he had like 31 points against the Blazers on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's been pretty good, man.
I'd say he's been very serviceable and probably a little bit better than that since Davis has been hurt, considering Bryant's on like a, you know, like a minimum contract type player. He's not even making $2 million, I don't think, this season, because he blew his knee out that most of the year last year. And, you know, he's playing, so he's not going to get a big contract. I mean, He's playing good so far for him, especially knowing that he's an offensive center and he's not much of a defensive center. But to fill in the void for an Anthony Davis where they don't really have it. I mean, Derek, have you ever heard of Winyon Gabriel?
No.
He would be the only other option they have outside of Thomas Bryant. So, self-explanatory. That's how I would say it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what you think about this team, man? Like, will they break 500 at, well, they're four games under right now. So, I suppose at some point in this season, you know, they'll break 500, but how serious of a contender do you see them being? Now, I'm looking at the rest of the Western Conference, and look, the Lakers, they're 5-5 in their last 10 games, and they're still only better than two teams in the West, and that's San Antonio and the Rockets. So,
right, two teams that don't care if they win or not.
Yeah. So my thing is this, and we spoke about this last week. I know Golden State going to be better, but all the teams above them has the potential to stay where they're at, or maybe shuffle a few spots high or lower, but I don't see Golden State falling below 10th in the West. I don't see maybe the Jazz may drop a little bit, but Phoenix is going to get healthier at some point. You know, Clippers, they're still just getting healthy. Pelicans is hanging on without Zion. You know, so how many teams are they actually better than in the Western Conference?
See, that's a great question, because their biggest weakness is their defense is terrible. I mean, they gave up one. The night that I was going to talk about that NBA TV game with the Rockets and the Lakers and how they were just talking LeBron steps the entire game with Brendan Haywood just spewing them out, it was making me sick listening to it. But when the Rockets are scoring over 130 points against you, Derek, what is the number one term that I say on the show over the last couple of years? Quote, unquote. That's a problem.
Yeah.
When that is the case, when you can't fix your defense, Schroeder is not a defensive point guard.
Nope.
Westbrook gambles a lot. He's not fully who he used to be. LeBron, he can play good defense at times, but he can't play it throughout the game.
Yeah, he's not consistent.
To me, outside of Anthony Davis, who before his injury was absolutely spectacular as a defensive on the defensive end, he was just doing everything. He was scoring almost 30 points, getting like 4 blocks. He was getting steals. The guy was disruptive around the rim. He was as good as advertised as we wanted him to be before the season started. How we talked about how he needs to be everything for this team. And I think he was doing that, because even when LeBron was sitting some games at the beginning of the year and Davis was out there just dominating, the Lakers were still in these games against teams that they're not even close to being better at. To me, the league is so much better than it used to be, just top to bottom of the talent that's available. And I'm sorry, a team like Utah, I don't see them dropping compared to a team like the Lakers that are going to be fighting an uphill battle the rest of the season. And I'm going to say this, that Rui Hachimura won't get you to the playoff. He won't get you to the playing game. He's not that good.
Yeah.
He's not a bust. Because hot take, and I'm going to die on this hill until it's proven wrong. James Wiseman is a draft bust. Now, Rui Hachimura, I think he's overrated. I don't think he's that great because he doesn't contribute to actual winning basketball, but he is serviceable. It's not a big trade. I mean, I made a joke about it and whatnot, but if you're doing this to think that you're improving your roster, you're wrong. And the only way that they can improve this roster is if they wanted to improve it now, they would have included the extra stuff to make the Indiana deal happen before the season, to get rid of Westbrook, to have to give up, even though I've talked about extensively that how that 2027 pick is why it's so coveted for the Lakers having that if they really wanted to actually improve this roster, they would have gotten a Buddy Hield and a Miles Turner, and all of a sudden they would have been really good. Like, I actually think they would have been a top 4 or 5 team in the West easily if they would have got Buddy plus Miles Turner. But again, they set up a Rui Hachimura. I'm sorry, Derek. Don't see this team. I mean, they're like a 9-10 team at best this season. Davis has to be fully healthy in order to prove me wrong that they can get into even the 8 seed. I'm sorry. I know Carlton Cook is probably crying through his pillow right now hearing this, but I'm telling you, this Lakers team is not as good as the names that they have on their roster that the media and the NBA TV talking heads like to play, but I'm sorry, they're just not.
Well, I think left field correspondent, he would agree. He would agree with you on your assessment of the Lakers. It just, for a team that has so much ability, you know, so much potential. And you're sitting with LeBron James on your roster. Now, we would never, you know, we watched Michael Jordan come back and play for the Wizards in an organization that was way in a worse position than currently what the Lakers were in when they picked up LeBron. And Jordan came in and they improved 20 games right off the bat. If you got the best player in the world on your team, you should not be under 500. You shouldn't.
You would think that, but today's NBA and the talent and how good these specialized, even fringe players are, or the fringe starters, or the best, you know, the good bench players.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, 2001 and 2002 when the league is to where it's at, it's night and day difference, man. It's just a huge difference.
Yeah. And you look at, you know, you look at the changes in the rules that kind of has allowed for this more wide open, you know, brand of basketball where, you know, we're watching teams on average give up 118 points a night. And the standard now for a great defensive team is about 106, 108.
Sure.
Points, which is crazy, and the crazy part is, those two teams happen to be the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat, two best defensive basketball teams in the NBA right now.
Well, I'll tell you something, Derek. And when I was watching that Lakers Rockets game, I didn't get to put the context in this at the time because last week we spent, you know, so much talking about the Bucks and their future that when I was watching that Rockets Lakers game, you know, 9 days or 10 days ago or so, what give or take, when the announcer said, and I had to almost laugh and almost say something in the group chat because Anthony Bennett All-Star, multiple time Anthony Bennett All-Star Eric Gordon plays, I don't know why, but fun fact, if he stays on the Rockets and is not traded at the deadline, Eric Gordon might be on the Anthony Bennett All-Star 3 years in a row. It's probably going to happen. But for the NBA, so it was a Brendan Haywood and some dude that was doing play-by-play. And they were talking about, oh, Eric Gordon, 15 points. He could help somebody at the deadline with a playoff push. Like,
what?
Really? What? Yeah, what? He's playing on the worst team in the NBA, somehow getting starters minutes, and he's terrible. He's the same Eric Gordon that he always is. Oh, man. So the number one player in the league, where obviously the executives right now are saying it could possibly be the worst contract, is Duncan Robinson. He has a hand injury. He hasn't played for a long time. He's been buried on the Miami Heat bench for a reason, because he's overpaid and he's not very good. For what, you know, if he was out there, you know, I don't think the Heat are going to give him a lot of minutes. So I think an interesting thing at the deadline is, can the Heat move off of Duncan Robinson's contract and grab like an expiring? And how much do they have to attach with Duncan Robinson to get off that contract? And I think that's going to be a fun one, a fun example to see. And NBA 2K, I have a decent GM hat for a dude sitting in his house talking NBA. But I'll tell you this. If I were the worst team in the NBA and the Heat are trying to still be better, you know, still trying to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals, which, you know, they put up a pretty good fight against Boston last year, I would attach a first, maybe even two first-round picks, pretty protected, to get off of Duncan Robinson. If you have to trade for Eric Gordon, fine. But I would at least get somebody who can at least suit up for you that can do something compared to a dude that really can't do anything for you, and I would get two first-round picks. I mean, I think that's a win-win trade for both sides. But in reality, the Heat are just going to have to sit on Robinson and wait for the and wait for him to get better. Because I think Eric Gordon's that useless, but he's better than Duncan Robinson. I think that says a lot right now.
Yeah, and I watched that Heat game last night. Who was it? Heat and
Celtics.
Celtics, yeah, Heat and Celtics, and that was a nice game. It was a good game. Kind of disappointed, you know, the Celtics allowing that lead to evaporate the way they did. But the Heat, you know, they played hard. They fought. In a game that, you know, they probably shouldn't have won.
Well, here's the thing. So the Celtics didn't have Horford. They didn't have Brown. They didn't have Smart. They didn't have Brogdon. So they didn't have most of their players that they need each night to go out and dominate most of the league. That's what they've done.
Yeah.
You know, but kudos to the Heat. They have found some terrific finds over the last few years. And even when they started on the show, they found some really good players on the cheap back when they had like a 20-win win streak with Goran Dragic and James Johnson and Tyler Johnson. Like, I loved that roster. That roster was so great, you know, before the bubble. It was like, you know, well before the bubble. But anyway, so they got a guy, Max Strus, shooter. He's a decent rebounder, I think, for his size. I like that he can be aggressive with steals. I like Max Strus. He's a dude that they would have found for nothing, and he starts. He plays actually pretty big minutes for the Heat. There's a guy on the Heat. He's a backup center. His name is Orlando Robinson. I believe he's either undrafted or a late second-round pick, and the dude looks really good out there. Dwayne Dedman, for some reason, he kind of pissed off the Heat because he hasn't played in a while, and he got kicked out of a game a few games ago, and he was arguing with the Heat bench, or it was something weird that was going on with him. And Orlando Robinson looks energetic. He looks like a, you know, a Hassan Whiteside before Whiteside got an ego. And I like what they have going on there. You know, Hayward Highsmith isn't bad. Caleb Martin starts and plays a lot of minutes for them because Jimmy Butler just hasn't been playing very much. So I think the Heat's record is where it's at because they're scrappy, smaller players that you don't really know who they are actually are pretty good. They hustle. They play good team overall defense because they're the Heat. That's what Eric Spoelstra is. Bam Adebayo should be an all-star this year. I think he should be. Where hot take, you know, Jimmy Butler, he probably will be an all-star, but he hasn't played a lot. So I think Bam definitely should be. I do think that he is in the second tier of the East. But they're still good.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you got to give Eric Spoelstra, Pat Riley, and you know, that whole front office, you got to get them some mad props for what they've been able to do post Dwayne Wade, post LeBron James. You know, normally when you come out of a stretch where you've been so dominant, you kind of go away for a little bit. It take a little bit of time, you know, to rebound and you know, put together a team that's back in the contention year in and year out. You're talking about, you know, that organization is one of the, you know, favorites or one of the teams that could, you know, make a run. And they've done it not with really any household names. I mean, Jimmy Butler, maybe Tyler Hero. But other than that, there's no real, like, you know, KD, LeBron James type name, you know, even Brown in Boston. Tatum, Zion. You know, they don't have but names I, like I that.
Think you argue that Bam Adebayo.
No, he's becoming
he's a Jaylen Brown type of talent.
Yeah, and I've been very, very impressed with how you say his name? Adebayo or
Bam Adebayo.
So I've been very impressive of watching his development since he's gotten into the NBA and just watching him. You know, this guy, he probably works harder than anybody in the league, because to watch a player development is fast as his development has been, especially ball handling. When he first came in the league, he wasn't doing that. He's bringing the ball up court now like a guard. Post moves, can play with his back to the basket, can attack off the dribble, has a very good mid-range jump shot. This dude has become one of the better players in the league. And he's still young. He's got a long way to grow. He hasn't hit his peak yet. So to see
and how right were the Heat to not include a Bam Adebayo in a Jimmy Butler trade when they traded away Josh Richardson, when Josh Richardson was actually really good when he was on the Heat, and he was there. He ended up being the main young piece that came back, that went back to Philly in that Jimmy Butler trade, and that they did not include Bam Adebayo, and then they drafted Tyler Hero after that. Like, it was a lot of good fortune, I think, for the Heat in order for them to, for the Sixers to say they were going to pay Tobias Harris all that money instead of Jimmy Butler. And then that trade happened, and, the Heat are in just as good of a place than maybe the Sixers are too. Like, I think the Heat are probably a little bit less, probably a tad lower than the Sixers, not by much, but for the Heat to still be where they are year in and year out with those two couple of things that did not happen, or how they got Jimmy Butler, has been a great fortune for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, to the front office, Pat Riley and the people up there, man, when they scout and develop draft, free agency, they know the type of players that they want, and those are the type of players that they get. So, and to keep them together,
they get young, hungry players that are good hustle players that they can go into the Heat culture. With Bam having a pretty big contract, with Jimmy Butler having a massive contract, Kyle Lowry, they don't have a lot of room to work with. But they actually, their front office does their job compared to the Lakers. Well, I don't think they do their job. And I think we have been pretty critical of their front office that they don't do their job very well.
Yeah.
They don't have a lot to work with when it comes to the salary cap. Either the Lakers don't because of their situation. But at the end of the day, the Heat have made the lapse compared to the Lakers when it comes to their, their additional players. And it's good that Miami is not L.A. when it comes to the limelight and spotlight of the NBA, where Miami can have these guys, Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and Caleb Martin, Hayward Highsmith, and Orlando Robinson to be effective, where they wouldn't even sniff time when it comes to if they were on the Lakers. And it just doesn't make a lot of NBA sense to go full circle about Rui Hachimura, who I don't think he's that great. He's a one-dimensional dude. And it's fitting that the Lakers wanted to trade for him. I think you see where I'm getting at here. Like, you scout these guys, either undrafted or guys that you sign up to cheaper deals. You give them minutes, they play hard for you on the Heat. But then you trade for Rui Hachimura. That's where I think the difference in these organizations are at.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you on that, man. You know, from top to bottom, it's an organization, and they continue to. I'm not gonna even say defy the odds. They've established themselves now as a favorite year in and year out, and they've been steady this year. Kind of got out to a slow start, but now they started string together some wins and put things together. So. But yeah, man, that Miami team, definitely one of the better teams to watch in the league because they do share the ball. It's a lot of ball movement and a lot of basic fundamental basketball plays that's being made, within the offense, which is always good to see.
We still are seeing Denver being the best team in the West. That changing. Hot takes that I'm gonna, but the hills I'm gonna die on for this season right now is James Wiseman is a complete draft bust. Nikola Jokic is the best player in the NBA right now, at this moment in time. And I do think that Jokic should still win MVP 33 in a row.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Lakers are making the playoffs.
You might be on to something there. Me personally, I don't, that's why I asked the question, because there's not many scenarios here that can work in the Lakers' favor of them, like, going on a massive run and pulling up into that 7-10 spot when you still sitting there with Phoenix, Utah, Minnesota, and Golden State right now occupying those four spots from 7-10. So, I mean, they would have to start losing big time because obviously the goal is maintaining the spot as well. So once you get into it, you want to maintain it. You got to stay on pace, and I don't think the Lakers just can do it. I just don't think they are equipped that way.
I don't think so either. Guards are Westbrook and Schroeder. Anthony Davis is not healthy. LeBron has to do everything right now, and we have seen it for the last two seasons. When LeBron has to do everything, you're not going to be a winning record team. And at his age, and what he's doing at his age, what he did last night, he had over 40 points, and they still got their butts kicked by the Clippers. At the end of the day, LeBron needs the help to be LeBron. He can still be LeBron, but your record's going to be terrible if he's your own guy.
Yeah,
it's just the way it is. The league is too good now to where LeBron you can't just have him and just. He does the rest for you. It's not that simple anymore. This is not the 2008 Eastern Conference. It's just not what it is anymore. And so I feel like that's where we're at. If Anthony Davis is healthy, then maybe you can have a chance. But outside of that, We're gonna reach a point where the All-Star break happens where we don't even need to talk about him anymore, because it's a foregone conclusion. Like, last year we determined a certain time or date. We might have marked it on a calendar and posted it on a billboard or something that they're not going to make the playoffs. They're terrible now. Like, we can't talk about them anymore because they're worthless to talk about. All-Star break, if it's around this mark, It's going to be close, man. That's what I'm going to tell you.
Yep, yep. And ladies and gentlemen, just to announce them here, we do have Mr. William Graves waiting patiently on the line. So I want to, you know, keep
William, I will be quick. But last hill I'm going to die on, Toronto Raptors are going to blow up this roster. The starting five of a Gary Trent, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam. This team is going to be a lot different come trade deadline. Oh, when we were surprised about the Haliburton or Hield and Sabonis trade, Haliburton and Hield for Sabonis trade,
yeah,
where we were stunned by that trade at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I think Derek, you're going to be stunned of how big of a return the Raptors are going to get on OG Anunoby and how good he really is. I think you're going to see a Drew Holiday-type package for OG Anunoby. That's how much a team is going to have to give up. I think it's going to be at least two firsts, two swaps, and a decent young player, and maybe a bad contract on top of it, in order like an expiring, in order for the Raptors to say yes. To me, the Raptors have no depth. They have way too many forwards on their bench, which is weird because they don't have a lot of guards. Their starting five is actually really good. But after that, they're like the Mavericks. They're bad. They're so bad after it. So I think the Raptors are going to blow up this roster. They are the number one team, I feel like, in the league that's going to do that. And we're going to see people calling Toronto quite constantly. And no, Lakers fans, they're not going to be able to trade Westbrook and get somebody very good from Toronto, because the Lakers are going to have to give up the rest of their, if any draft pick they have left, in order for Toronto to even entertain it. And even with how big his expiring contract is, it's not going to happen. But I think there's a team out there that will trade for Fred VanVleet, and I think there's a trade out there that somebody's going to go after OG Anunoby. And the last thing is, I finally think that John Collins will actually get traded from Atlanta. It's been going on for a couple of years that Atlanta has been wanting to trade him, or that there's rumors out there they've been taking calls on him, how he hasn't been happy. This team has just been really weird this season with Trae Young's relationship with Nate McMillan, and how the fan base is kind of turning on Trae Young. It's ludicrous to think about it. So I think that they're going to have to retool, and Toronto's going to be completely blowing up their roster.
Yep, yep. I agree, man. You know, at some point, you do have to hit the reset button. And it may not be, you know, when you want it, but it always lets you know when you have to set that reset button, start over, build a team in a more, you know, productive way, so, you know, everybody could, you know, benefit. So we'll see. It's just, you know, this season has been interesting so far, and I'm sure, like always, you know, afterwards.
I think the number one interesting team that might think about buying instead of selling, instead of trying to trade off their players, they'll try to go out and try to acquire a guy. Look out for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, I know I'm a Thunder fan and I want to see it, but all those picks, they have cap room, they have a decent contract or two to get off if they have to do it. I think that the team is surprisingly being very good, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is 100% all-star, and I think he even has consideration to be a starter this year, how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been. But I would be surprised if the Thunder were not trying to acquire a player at the deadline and try to get in to get this young core some play-in or a playoff series experience. I think they're not tanking this year, even though going into the season I thought that they would, but they're playing good. They are playing a lot of good teams close, and I don't think that they're even coming close to tanking. They're not going to go out and just lose 20 games in a row or whatever. I think they're in a different direction. They're on the upward trend, and they are a team that could call up Toronto to go after Moji Anunoby. To put him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander next to each other with the Josh Giddey, to let OG be that dominant two-way defensive player that he is, and have Giddey and Shai just completely handle the ball, that would be a very dangerous and fun team to see. But the reason why I point them out is because they have the cap and they have the draft picks to give Toronto for a young player in OG that is just so much better than when he came into the league, that it is possible we could see that they're a team that at least fits the build to, I think, go after a guy like him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I talked a lot, and I know Willie needs to get on, but I will let you go. Thank you for having me on. I will be in Hawaii next Wednesday, hoping, cross my fingers, I could jump on and talk some NBA, talk some more deadline. We can name our all-star teams together. That's something that I will do my best to come on to do that.
So you'll be in Hawaii on Wednesday, right? That's what you're saying? So this what?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be in Hawaii for 2 weeks.
Okay. All right. So yeah. So this is what I see you doing. We can enhance the broadcast this way. We're gonna have you come in on the video chat. So then you could we could display that beautiful landscape of wherever you're gonna be at. But Hawaii is nice. What is you out there for, work or something, or are you just taking a 2 week vacation? I know my man Nicholas get around now. Don't let this guy fool you, man. This man be doing some traveling, so he could just be taking a week off of work. Just, I need to get away, go to Vegas for a little bit, gamble, just relax, get
hang
my
out
mind.
With William Graves.
Yeah.
Middle of an episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Good times.
Man, you don't even remember that night, bro.
who don't remember that night?
You don't.
I absolutely do.
But I saw you sleep, half sleep on the thing.
I might have been half sleep, but I still remember everything that happened.
My dog
that
William
night.
Say, man. Debo, I'm not gonna kid you. I have had a little bit to drink, but I'm good. He was like, but I'm good. And about 45 minutes later, he was like, man, I am not feeling good.
yeah, that. Man, why you gotta put me on blast like that?
Man, because it was funny,
hey,
bro.
William, it was very funny. I had to, Derek was kind of opening that door, and we had to close it,
Yeah. Hey, William, say, I'll be back. I'll be right back. So Nicholas got on the air. He's talking, me and him conversating for like, it's probably about 30 minutes and passing. I'm like, bro, you seen William? He was like, no, man, I don't know where he went.
I had gone into the bathroom because I felt like I was about to throw up and everything. And I got in there and I splashed some cold water on my face and I felt okay, and then I came back out, and I sat on the couch and everything like that. I'm like, man, I know I did not have that much to drink to be feeling like this.
You must have.
And, man, Derek, man, Nicholas can vouch for this. We literally sat at this, like, airplane bar that was inside of this, like, mall or whatever. Dude, we literally had one drink, and then we went back to the condo.
Did you have more drinks at the condo? That's...
No.
Oh, so somebody...
No alcoholic drinks. I mean, I think Nicholas had, like, a soda there, and I had, like, a tea or whatever, but no other alcoholic drinks. I mean, like, literally, we sit there, we had one drink, and then we went back to the condo, and I was sitting there, and everything like that. Like I said, you know, I was like getting, I was like packing and getting ready to leave because I had to leave that night, and everything like that, and get back up here. But like, as the show started, I was like, you know, all right, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden, he just hit me, and I was like, man. And I looked at Nicholas. I was like, man, dude, you're gonna have to take over for a minute. And then I was like, I'll be right back. And then that right back, it never really happened.
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
You was MIA. You was out of there, bro.
Man, that was. But Nicholas, if we do meet back up in Vegas, we ain't going back to that bar.
Yeah, I think y'all
going back to that bar. And I think y'all
should. I think y'all should go back.
Take a picture for Derek.
I think y'all should.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Hey, when y'all go back, just tell the guys, man, you know, I came here last year, and I had the best one drink. I've never been drunk off of one drink, but this place, I came here, and I only had one drink, and I was drunk. So whatever drink that was, I want that drink again. I want it right now.
No, I do not. No.
I'll let you guys finish off the show. Thank you for having me on, Derek.
All right, brother. We'll catch you next time, Nicholas.
You got it. Maybe I'll have Free Willy jumping in the background as I'm talking NBA.
There you go.
All right, boys. We'll see you.
All right, see you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a Rat Pack Sports Show NBA Insider, Nicholas Lane. And as always, my guy comes on, does a great job. I think I outdid him this time because I actually, named off the four Laker players that was current, that were the four current Laker players that was once all on the Washington Wizards. Just a few years ago. Now they're all in the Lakers, so I think I caught him off guard with that. He was impressed that I did my homework. So anytime I can impress Nicholas, you know you did something. You know you did something right. So, boom.